From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Welcome to Washington Watch. Thanks so much for joining me today. Well, coming up on this Wednesday edition, as higher prices, which President Biden said were transitory 2 years ago, settle in, the president is now touting Bidenomics.
Bidenomics is about the future. Bidenomics is just another way of saying restore the American dream, because it worked before.
The president apparently believes his track record on the economy is his path to victory in 2024. But here's the challenge for the president. Only 34% of Americans agree that Bidenomics is actually working. We're going to talk with North Carolina Congressman Dan Bishop in just a moment. Also, last night, one of the whistleblowers in the Hunter Biden cover-up scandal, which could, among other things, derail the president's bid for a second term, went on the legacy media.
There are certain investigative steps that we weren't allowed to take that could have led us to President Biden.
And you wanted to take them?
We needed to take them.
And you weren't allowed to take them?
That's correct.
That was IRS whistleblower Gary Shapley last night on CBS. We'll talk about that a little bit later. And speaking of cover-ups, is the Biden administration covering up information regarding the origins of COVID-19? Question is, why did the Director of National Intelligence not release the information that was required by a law passed by Congress? We're going to talk with Asian expert Gordon Chang a little later here on Washington Watch. And I guess you could ask the question, why is this important? Why are we even talking about it? Well, here's one aspect. Could the information alter the way the medical community responds to pandemics in the future? Or should I say, should respond in the future? Well, Dr. Robert Malone will join us for that conversation. And this is something that I've been advocating for and agitating for years.
Why should those corporations, why should the C-suite and all of these woke executives, why should they and their money count more than your vote? Why should they be able to control this country rather than we the people? Why should they be the ones who set the agenda while they try to debase our culture and serve their God that is money? No, thank you.
That was Missouri Senator Josh Hawley this past weekend at the Faith and Freedom Conference. I tell you what, it is past time for Republicans to end the unholy alliance with woke corporate America. We're going to talk with Dr. Ben Carson a little later on this edition of Washington Watch. Our word for today comes from Matthew 16. When Jesus came into the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, saying, "Who do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" So they said, "Some say John the Baptist, some Elijah, and others Jeremiah or one of the prophets." He said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" Simon Peter answered and said, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Jesus answered and said to him, "Blessed are you, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven." Now this is the question we each must answer. Who is Jesus to you? In this passage, we see three responses, but only one is correct. The rebellious crowd said he was the son of Satan. The religious crowd said he was a prophet. But those in relationship with him rightfully called him Lord. To find out more about our journey through the Bible, go to frc.org/Bible. And by the way, I'm inviting you to join me for this year's Pray Vote Stand Summit in Washington, D.C., September the 15th through the 17th. You'll have a chance to hear from some of our nation's top conservative political and spiritual leaders. And you'll hear from some of those interviewing for the White House. In fact, I'm announcing today that we'll be joined by former President Donald Trump and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, among others. To register, simply go to prayvotestand.org. President Biden spoke in Chicago today, spinning a narrative that claims success for a once pejorative term he's now embraced, Bidenomics. President's speech was long on boast, but pointedly ignored the effects of his economic record for the average American who's still suffering from high inflation, spiked interest rates, and the rise in the overall cost of living that we see every time we go to the grocery store or try to gas up our car. Well, joining me now to discuss this and much more, Congressman Dan Bishop. He serves on the House Homeland Security Committee and the House Judiciary Committee. He represents the 8th Congressional District of North Carolina. Congressman Bishop, welcome back to the program. Always great to see you.
Thank you, Tony. I'm glad to see you as well.
So let me just start with this, your reaction to President Biden's boasting about Bidenomics.
You know, Americans have had a lot of opportunity to wonder whether we're living in the same universe as President Biden. I mean, every time I go to the grocery store, go out to a meal, inflation continues. It's not just that inflation, it's sort of cooled from the headlines, and it's not at the, you know, record-breaking pace, but this is cumulative, Tony. People who suffered through 8% inflation plus, now we're at 5-something percent inflation per year, and it's continuing to mount, and it means your dollar doesn't go as far. People are suffering setbacks economically, and they're accumulative across the Biden administration. How he can tout that as a record of success is a mystery to me. And as you said, I thought your line at the beginning was that most Americans disagree, and that won't serve him well if that's what he's going to rely on in seeking election to another term.
Well, there is a poll, a recent poll by the Associated Press and Norick Center for Public Affairs Research, that shows only 34%, basically one out of three Americans, agree that his economic policies are working. That is actually lower than his overall approval rating of 41%.
It's devastating. If there's an area, well, if you tried to pick out an area he's performed least well, I don't know, you'd have to get into foreign affairs and some other things, but certainly his economic outlook has, and his policies, it's been just massive spending at all points in time. Remember, before the midterm elections, Congress under the control of Democrats, and they spent $6 trillion basically over the course of, they've set it for spending over the course of 10 years on single party votes, and that generated the inflation that everyone's living with, and it continues to be the predominant feature of our present economy, and it's just damaging Americans. And that 1 in 3 figure that you cited reflects that experience.
Congressman, I've been in this arena for some time, bumping up to 30 years, so I know that Americans have kind of a short frame of reference. Unfortunately, they forget and move on. But the economy is one thing that they don't, because as you said, every time you go to the grocery store, you see this, you get sticker shock, because your income is not keeping up with the pace of the cost in the rise in living. And so, you know, while we're not paying $5 a gallon, we were at the peak under his policies, it's only down to about $3, and they're touting that as success. I want to go back to what it was before they showed up and we were paying, $1.90 or less.
You're correct that people do tend to get accustomed to a particular gas price. It doesn't mean that it doesn't have deleterious impacts on our lives, but you do sort of settle in. But as you say, we haven't gotten back where gas prices used to be. And the thing about the continuing inflation is the shock keeps recurring. It's something, you know, every month or so you're back in the grocery store and you say, well, how did that item get to be that price? And how do I make ends meet? Americans are going to persistently experience that until we go back to what we had solved for 40 years in this country, Tony. We had nominal inflation, very low controlled inflation for 40 years. And that's what Biden's policies has destroyed.
Yeah. Well, so I want to switch gears on this because I think we're in agreement. I'm happy he's running on the economy because it's certainly not going to help him. Let's talk about another topic. You serve on the House Judiciary Committee. Last night, we saw one of the whistleblowers, the IRS whistleblower, Mr. Shapley, go on the legacy media and actually talk about this. So the legacy media is now paying attention to the Hunter Biden scandal. This tells me this thing is starting to get legs.
I think that's true. I don't, you know, you wonder these days, since legacy media seems to be so freighted with bias and alliance with one party, which is to our great misfortune across the board. But does that mean that the policy or the political environment is shifting and President Biden is endangered? I don't know. But I will say this about Mr. Shapley. He is the epitome of what whistleblowers are supposed to be. At every point in time, he has proceeded in accordance with the law, and all of his commentary, everything that he has said has been about what a professional investigation would require and the ways in which that has been stymied by officials under the control of the Attorney General Merrick Garland.
So I want you to walk us through this. You've been tracking this as a member of the oversight of the Department of Justice, as a member of the Judiciary Committee. So Walk us through this. What is unfolding? What is this all about?
Well, you know, it's all about how the criminal conduct of Hunter Biden has been handled by the Justice Department. And as we know, the Attorney General Merrick Garland, in public testimony, has claimed precisely the opposite of what Mr. Shapley and another whistleblower are saying with regards to the investigation. And that raises questions of whether Mr. Garland has lied under oath. And we, and Kevin McCarthy's commented about this, Jim Jordan, chairman of the Judiciary Committee, will be in the Judiciary Committee where we get to the bottom of that and thoroughly investigate these conflicting claims.
You have the Attorney General in Delaware, the district, U.S. Attorney in Delaware, Mr. Weiss, saying that his hands were tied. You have now, you know, two whistleblowers saying that their investigation was blocked, but you have the Attorney General saying, no, they had free rein. They could do what they wanted to do. Someone's not telling the truth.
That's right. That's right, Tony. Mr. Weiss testified in the Senate that the U.S. Attorney in Delaware, Mr. Weiss, had been advised he had full authority. He could bring cases in other jurisdictions. That's an important point, that he wasn't to be denied anything that he needed, and that he had the pledge of the Attorney General not to interfere with the investigation. He said he'd live by that pledge. But Mr. Shapley tells a different story, says that he couldn't, Weiss could not charge people outside Delaware. There's another U.S. attorney, Matthew Graves, that he prevented Mr. Weiss from charging Hunter in another jurisdiction. And he also asked for special counsel status, Mr. Weiss did, where he would have complete independence from the Department of Justice and was denied that. So these are all very, very troubling things. Mr. Shapley goes on and talks about the ways in which investigative leads needed to be pursued, that at one point Hunter's well, the White House was tipped off to a warrant being served against him. You know, there are allegations about an assistant U.S. attorney who consistently hesitated to move forward with actions that needed to be taken in the investigation. So it's very serious. And Jim Jordan, I've heard him say now multiple times on TV, I anticipate hearing when we get back from recess, we're going to be digging into all of this. And we need to get these various people in front of our committee or in front of a transcribed interview.
Unfortunately, we're out of time here, but we're just talking about kind of the criminality of investigating crime. We're not even talking about the crime itself, which has links to communist China and payoffs that may have gone not just to Hunter Biden, but to what was described as the big guy.
Right. People have become familiar with that WhatsApp message that has been revealed where Hunter claims that the president of the United States, well, then not then president, but Joe Biden was in the room with him when he was threatening, you know, essentially coercing payment of millions of dollars from an agent of the Chinese right. Communist government.
And after that WhatsApp message, $5 million flowed to Hunter Biden, according to reports.
Yes,
Congressman Dan Bishop, always great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Likewise, Tim.
All right, folks, stay with us. More Washington Watch after the break as we look at the lack of information released over the COVID connections.
Everything we do begins as an idea. Before there can be acts of courage, there must be the belief that some things are worth sacrificing for. Before there can be marriage, there is the idea that man should not be alone. Before there was freedom, there was the idea that individuals are created equal. It's true that all ideas have consequences, but we're less aware that all consequences are the fruit of ideas. Before there was murder, there was hate. Before there was a Holocaust, there was the belief by some people that other people are undesirable. Our beliefs determine our behavior, and our beliefs about life's biggest questions determine our worldview. Where did I come from? Who decides what is right and wrong? What happens when I die? Our answers to these questions explain why people see the world so differently. Debates about abortion are really disagreements about where life gets its value. Debates over sexuality and gender and marriage are really disagreements about whether the rules are made by us or for us. What we think of as political debates are often much more than that. They're disagreements about the purpose of our lives and the source of truth. As Christians, our goal must be to think biblically about everything. Our goal is to help you see beyond red and blue, left and right, to see the battle of ideas at the root of it all. Our goal is to equip Christians with a biblical worldview and help them advance and defend the faith in their families, communities, and the public square. Cultural renewal doesn't begin with campaigns and elections. It begins with individuals turning from lies to truth. But that won't happen if people can't recognize a lie and don't believe truth exists. We want to help you see the spiritual war behind the political war, the truth claims behind the press release, and the forest from the trees.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. Website, TonyPerkins.com. Well, last Friday, instead of declassifying information related to potential links between the Wuhan Institute of Virology and the origin of the coronavirus disease, as required by law, the Biden administration simply released a 10-page summary of the findings. Now, this demonstrates the Biden administration is not only running from accountability for unscientific lockdowns and mandates, but from transparency with the American people. Why are they afraid to share the information with the people they work for, the American people? Joining me now to discuss this is Gordon Chang, a distinguished senior fellow at the Gatestone Institute. He's author of The Coming Collapse of China and the Great U.S.-China Tech War. You can follow him on Twitter, at Gordon G. Chang. Gordon, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, Tony.
So, Gordon, the White House finally released something regarding the origins of COVID after Congress passed a law, but it was a mere summary of their findings, not the intelligence that the classified intelligence that was required by the law. Why do you think there's a lack of transparency here?
I think the Biden administration doesn't want to anger Beijing. And if they were to release the underlying intelligence, which is required by the COVID origins law of 2023, then we would find out things, and I think Beijing would throw a hissy fit. And that's the last thing that the Bidens want to do. So really what we're having here is the guy in the Oval Office is covering up the greatest mass murder in history, or at least of this of our times. And, you know, he's basically sided with the Communist Party over the American people. And let's remember that COVID has killed almost 7 million people, according to Johns Hopkins, probably more. And of that total, 1.1 million Americans were comprised of that. So clearly, we've got an administration that is more on China's side than it is on ours.
So from this 10-page report, and I've read through the report, and even some of it is redacted, what did we learn? Did we learn anything from this summary?
Actually, we didn't. Remember in 2021, Biden prepared an unclassified summary of a 90-day investigation. And we basically learned the same things this week that we did 2 years ago. What we really need is the underlying documentation and the underlying intelligence. Even if redacted, I think that we're going to find out a lot. And the Biden administration doesn't want us to see that.
There have been, in this, and it's really just a hodgepodge because they said this, they said that, and so there's no conclusions based upon what they have here. And even suggesting that, well, it didn't look like it came from the lab. It could have been natural in its occurrence. But then there are reports that said this was engineered. And even some in China saying that this was a bioweapon. What are we to make of this?
Well, I think it's essentially that the administration is summarizing the evidence because they don't want us to see the underlying documents. We know that the circumstantial evidence is overwhelming for a lab leak because you have researchers at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. The first three were actually technicians there. And you know, the zoonotic theory just doesn't hold water. Here you have bats in southern China, gave it to an intermediary mammal that traveled, 700-800 miles north and then infected a human only within like a couple miles of the Wuhan Institute of Virology, which is essentially a biological weapons lab. You know, that doesn't really make sense to anybody, except, of course, for those who want to protect the Communist Party of China.
When you take this, I mean, when you look at this in the totality of what's happening with the Biden administration, Hunter Biden, payments from China, is there a connection here?
There's certainly a pattern. You have, for instance, an administration that is reluctant to talk about fentanyl in candid terms. We know that China runs a near total or total surveillance state. The fentanyl gangs could not operate without the approval of the Communist Party. The Chinese central government diplomats support the fentanyl gangs. The gangs launder their money through the Chinese state banking system. And what we have is 65,000 to 75,000 Americans last year died from doses of illegal fentanyl from China. And again, you have an administration that is siding with the Communist Party against the American people. You know, Xi Jinping did not get to vote for the president, but it looks like he's determining who the president, what the president of the United States does. You know, tens of millions of Americans got to vote. You know, we've been disenfranchised by Biden.
So, Gordon, what would you recommend Congress do now? Given the limited information they have in this report, what should be their next step?
You know, my next step would be the nuclear one. I would deny all funding for the intelligence agencies until they release the underlying documentation. You know, people, we have an FBI, we have a CIA. You know, and I'm sure they do some good things, but on balance, I'm really starting to wonder whether they serve the American people. So I'd say to them, look, if you don't do this, we're just not going to fund you. This has got to be, we American people have got to make a point that this government is run for us. It's not run for foreign countries, and especially it's not run for our enemy, the Communist Party of China.
A final question for you, Gordon Chang. Clearly, I mean, I would agree with you. I think there's an effort to try to cover for China. But is there more here that would undercut our own government's response to COVID and may impact how we deal with these pandemics in the future?
Well, we've got to worry about that because we know that Chinese researchers are working on specific ethnic genetic attacks, which are pathogens that will leave the Chinese immune and kill everybody else. And that's what they were working on at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. So we've got to prepare for the next pandemic. We've got to establish deterrence on China so they won't release that pathogen. And, you know, this is mortal. This is an existential threat. So that's why I think extreme solutions are called for right now, because we got our backs against the wall, Tony. And I think that if we were to withhold funding, I think the I think that the Biden administration would have no choice but to release the underlying documentation.
I think you're right. I think Congress is going to have to play the hardball with this administration and with the intelligence community. And that's really the only thing that Congress can do. The Republicans in Congress and the House have the purse strings, and they can tighten them until they get answers. Gordon Chang, always great to see you. Thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
Oh, well, thank you, Tony. I really appreciate it.
All right. Gordon Chang, check him out. Go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right, after the break, Dr. Robert Malone joins me to continue the conversation on the Biden administration's lab leak summary. And why should we be concerned about this as it pertains to future pandemics? Stay tuned. We'll talk about it next.
All of us are born with the desire to find truth and meaning. Where did I come from? What happens when I die? While our answers to these questions may divide us, we are united in our need for the freedom to answer life's biggest questions and make life's biggest decisions for ourselves. That's why religious freedom matters for everyone. Religious freedom matters because the powerful have long wanted to control those who are less powerful. Religious freedom matters because the freedom of those who are different is often threatened by those who believe different is dangerous. Leah Sheribu, a Christian teenager in Nigeria, remains a captive of Boko Haram for her refusal to renounce her Christian faith. Chinese pastor Wang Yi is serving a 9-year sentence for speaking publicly against the Chinese government. In Pakistan, Asif Pervez is on death row for allegedly sending a blasphemous text message. All of this because people in power decided different is dangerous. At the Center for Religious Liberty at Family Research Council, we promote religious freedom for everyone, because the only alternative is religious freedom for no one. We encourage Americans and the American government to engage and advocate for the persecuted, and they do. We work every day to bring good news to the afflicted, to proclaim liberty to captives and freedom to prisoners. We do it because that's what Jesus does. We work to give freedom to others because we ourselves have been set free.
Welcome back. I'm Tony Perkins, and this is Washington Watch. The website is tonyperkins.com. There's contact information for our guest and other resources that you might find helpful. Remember, our system of government, our republic, it's not made for spectators. It's made for participants, and we need you to be involved. And so we want to help you do that. Go to tonyperkins.com. All right, as we've been discussing, the Biden administration's Friday night news dump summary of the government findings on the origins of COVID fails to live up to what is required by the law, a law passed by this Congress back in March and signed by President Biden. It was bipartisan. You know, what, if any, information could be contained within the intelligence findings that might alter the way government actors respond to pandemics in the future? With me now to talk about this is Dr. Robert Malone, Chief Medical and Regulatory Officer for the Unity Project, and an internationally recognized physician scientist who specializes in advanced development of medical countermeasures to infectious diseases. Dr. Malone, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Thanks for having me on. Interesting topic. Interesting times we're living in, aren't they?
It's an understatement. Let me just get your thoughts on the summary report dumped late Friday night by the Biden administration. Did we learn anything from that?
We learned that the intelligence community wishes to play this very cautiously and has put out a document that reads to me a lot like a limited hangout. They are striving for consensus in this document, and they're not representing the breadth of opinions that exist. They're acknowledging that there's some differences, but this is very superficial. And they are taking the position that the initial infections appear to have been in Wuhan Institute of Virology personnel. They're asserting that they came from a transfer from an animal origin, presumably at that, although they won't say so because they give various caveats about the nature of the data. And they assert that there is no evidence that this was a biologically engineered virus, which is not consistent with a large fraction of the data and the emerging consensus globally. They make the assertion that this is absolutely not a biologic weapon. And basically, the position in this very short, circumspect document is almost identical to that I heard from Michael Callahan in February of 2020, when he was saying that his people had been all over the sequence and there was no evidence that it was engineered. I think that that is no longer a tenable argument, but that's the one that the Biden administration is putting forward in this document.
So, Dr. Malone, from a medical standpoint, I mean, when we have something like this as significant as the COVID pandemic that spread around the globe, shut everything down, you would think we want to go back and we want to assess, look at what happened, how it happened, how we responded to it so that we can plan for the future. This lack of transparency, doesn't this handicap us going forward?
Well, Tony, you live and operate in Washington, and what you're speaking of is the best in all possible worlds in an environment in which people are acting in good faith and intending to protect the public. That is not the Washington that we live in right now. This is not Washington, D.C. as it exists right now. Washington, D.C. right now is doing everything they can to cover their mismanagement and malfeasance during the last 3 years of the COVID crisis. And this is entirely consistent with that. I agree that in a world in which our government is focused on its task and its tasks as defined in the Constitution, things would go exactly as you propose. But everything is politicized, everything is spun, everything is propagandized, everything is basically a you know, form of warfare and competition. And the national interests of the citizenry get left behind in all of this scrum. It's shocking and yet entirely predictable. So I agree that that would be the way that things should be done in a world in which the government is acting in good faith. But I don't see any evidence of that.
And part of the reason that we may not be seeing that is so that they can protect and guard the power that they exercised over the lives of people. And if we had all the information, we would be able to determine that they misused that power.
Many of us believe that they did abuse power, and that abuse occurred really all across the Five Eyes Alliance nations in particular, also the European Union. But it's you know, there is various theories of the case and a lot of evidence indicating that government funding, as Bob Redfield testified on the Hill on sworn testimony, a former CDC director, former right hand of Bob Gallo, testified. We had USAID, State Department, NIH, multiple streams of money going into the Wuhan Institute of Virology funding this work. And the documents have been uncovered now, demonstrating that this is the case, most recently involving the demonstrating the involvement of Dr. Peter Hotez even. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of I don't know if we even want to call it smoke. I would say that we have a lot of documented evidence involving the contributions of the United States government directly and indirectly through academia.
Dr. Malone, we're going to have to leave it there. We're out of time. Always great to see you. Folks, stick with us. We're back on the other side of this break. It begins here and here and here. Every day. Before you stand, you need solid ground. Standing in a culture that wants you to surrender the truth won't work unless you have a firm foundation. At Family Research Council, we have that firm foundation, and you can find us standing. We stand for the value of all human life. We stand for the right of families to flourish. And every day, we stand for your freedom to believe and to live out those beliefs, both at home and abroad. We work with government officials, educating them on the issues from a biblical worldview. And when necessary, we hold them accountable. We equip Christians across America to be informed and to take action in their communities. With our daily radio program, television appearances, and vast online presence, we reach people where they are We envision an America where all human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. And that won't be realized if we're not standing. Stand for faith. Stand for family. Stand for freedom. Stand with us at FRC.
I'm often asked by people, Tony, how do you stay encouraged? How do you deal with all of the stuff in Washington, D.C., the negative policies that are attacking our faith, our family, and our freedoms? Well, you want me to let you in on the secret? It's called the Word of God. And that is why the Family Research Council embarked on Stand on the Word, a 2-year journey through the Bible. It's a chronological Bible reading plan. With just 10 to 15 minutes a day in 2 years, you will have covered the entire Bible. And to go along with this, Monday through Friday, I do a morning devotional that goes along with the reading of the day. It's all designed to encourage you on this journey, because the Word of God, as the psalmist said, in my affliction, here's my comfort, your word gives me life. That is our source of strength. To find out more, go to tonyperkins.com or frc.org/Bible. And I invite you to join me every morning for our Stand on the Word Bible devotion.
This fall, believers from across America will gather in our nation's capital. We'll hear from government leaders, policy experts, and leading Christian voices, learning how we can engage in government at every level, from local school boards to state legislatures to Congress and even the White House, to win back the soul of our nation. Join with us for the Pray, Vote, Stand Summit, Believe and Engage, September 15th through 17th. Register now at PrayVoteStand.org.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, this is something I've been talking about for a long time, advocating for. And that is, as the interest of big business and woke corporate America continue to really embrace a social agenda that is contrary to American values and to the families of many of the families, the American families that actually shop in their stores and use their businesses and services, what we're seeing finally is that Republicans are realizing that corporate America is going a different direction, and that they're social policies that they've embraced from the left are incompatible with Republican values. And so those that are running for office, we've seen this trend over the last decade, moving away from the corporate dollars, the big PAC dollars, and turning to small donations from the people who elect them. I think this is a great, great development. And that means that the business community is losing influence on Capitol Hill. Now, this is it's a big shift from the days when corporate industry PACs propelled such campaigns. Now, the interest of Wall Street and the Chamber of Commerce increasingly do not match those of voters concerned by the international outsourcing of jobs, the mass illegal immigration, woke corporate initiatives. You know, how might this influence legislation that affects working families? And how could this reshape America? Joining me now to discuss this and much more is Dr. Ben Carson. He's the former Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, a 2016 Republican presidential candidate, and the pioneering former director of the pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins. He is now the founder and chairman of the American Cornerstone Institute. Dr. Carson, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Tony. It's always nice to be with you.
It's good to see you. Before we jump into this topic, you are going to be one of our featured speakers at this year's Pray Vote Stand Summit, September the 15th through the 17th. And also today, we're announcing that former President Donald Trump will be there, as well as Governor Ron DeSantis. So a great lineup of American leaders that are going to be there September 15th through the 17th.
Well, I'm delighted that they are paying attention to, you know, values and our faith and the things that really made us into a great nation. So continue to encourage them, and thank you for providing the forum.
Well, you are always one of our favorite speakers, and the American people love to hear from you. I want to talk about this topic of what's happening with Republicans in corporate America. When you ran for president in 2016, you were commended for building a small-dollar donation machine. Tell us about that and where you turned for support.
Well, it was pretty amazing. A lot of people who are running now or who are planning on running ask me, how did you do that? How did you get all of that money and all that support? I have to be honest with you, I didn't plan it. I just got out there and started talking and people started supporting me. And, you know, even when I dropped out, I had to beg people to stop sending money. I think people are very much looking for decency and honesty. And that's something that's sorely lacking in Washington, D.C. right now. And I think people should spend a lot of time researching the people that they're going to be voting for and trying to determine if, in fact, they're simply politicians who are people who do what's politically expedient, or are they true patriots and people who are truly interested in moving America forward?
Yeah, when going all the way back before you even stepped into the political arena, I remember when you spoke at the National Prayer Breakfast, I mean, you just spoke and you told the truth. And I actually think you're right. I think Americans are just looking for people who will shoot straight with them, speak the truth, not the, you know, the politically correct nonsense that that people feel like they have to speak so that they're not canceled or they're not ignored by the media. And I think people rally to that.
Absolutely. I mean, speaking of canceled, you know, I found out today that our American Cornerstone Facebook page was being taken down because they say it violates their principles. Talking about our faith and our families and the important things that made America to a great nation violates their principles. Isn't that interesting?
That is, frankly, that's incredible. I mean, it is amazing to me as I've watched, you know, you've had the SPLC for a while actually see you, call you a threat to this country. In fact, let me do this before I forget about it. You actually have a new book out with the Cornerstone Institute.
Yes, it's called Freedom of Bark, and it's a children's book, and it's designed to help them understand the concept of freedom of speech and the First Amendment and what that is about, what our freedoms are for, and why they're so precious, why we must protect them, and also it teaches children to respect other people. If everybody's barking at the same time, you don't hear anything except a bunch of noise. And we need to learn how to listen to each other and how to work together. So vitally important. And children are so malleable. You know, they're very impressionable. And they're also very curious, which is one of the reasons that the Marxists are so anxious to get into our children early on and to convert them. That's why Vladimir Lenin said, give me your children to teach for 4 years and the seed that I sow will never be uprooted. Well, we want to be just as vigorous as they are, even more vigorous in making sure that we give them the right principles. We can't shield them from all the foolishness that's going on. You can try, but it's not going to be successful.
Right.
So instead, we have to put things on the other end of the scale to balance it off. And
absolutely,
to give them at least the possibilities. And people can go to AmericanCornerstone.org or LittlePatriotsLearning.com to find out more about these books. All the proceeds go right back into the program to create more content. And all that content is free of charge because it's underwritten by patriotic Americans.
You can curse the darkness or you can turn on the light. And what we're talking about here is shining light. So I don't know, are you going to have bark time story hours in libraries across the country to counteract the drag queen story hours?
We're gonna fight them very hard with all of our books. We have a continual series of books that are coming out. Cool. And we also make it possible for people to request a visit, either virtual or in person. If we happen to be in an area doing something, we have no problems with stopping by a school and talking to the children, sharing some of these things with them.
Well, I'd like to talk with you offline. Maybe we can encourage some of our supporters across the country, some of our community impact teams that we have in churches across the country, maybe to get these books and request opportunities to read them in the local library and take this information out there to the kids and encourage them with a positive message about what America is all about. I want to go back to our topic of how we see Republicans now standing up after you did this, Donald Trump did this, more Republicans now in the Senate, which has kind of been the old guard that is the establishment Republicans that have been slow to break with corporate America. Are you encouraged by this development that they're saying no to woke corporate America and looking to the American people for their support?
Well, you know, corporate America has a very important purpose, and that is to reward their stockholders. Now, they can't necessarily do that if they have another agenda, like being social manipulators. And I think they're starting to recognize that. And I'm glad to see also that the people are pushing back. You know, the Anheuser-Busch thing, the Target thing, all these things, I think, are wake-up calls for corporate America to get back to doing what they're supposed to be doing and stop meddling. You know, one of the reasons that our country was established is because people wanted to come to a place where they could live the life that they wanted to live without it being manipulated and without all kind of mandates. And whether those mandates come from the government or from corporate America, they still have a deleterious effect on the freedoms that people experience. And the only people who can change that are we, the people. We have to put our foot down and say, this is America. This is where we are free to live the way that we want to worship the way we want to say what we want to say. And we're not going to stand for government or corporate America to try to dictate how our lives should go from cradle to grave.
It's interesting, not surprising, but interesting, Dr. Carson, that the business community that really hijacked by the left or embracing the left social policies, I don't know what they were thinking, that the economic policies wouldn't follow with the leftist social policies. But recently, the Chamber of Commerce is up in arms over the president's pick for the FTC chair, the current FTC chair, Lina Khan, who is doing everything that business hates. And so they're up in arms. But this is, this is the chickens coming home to roost. If you want the social policy of the left, you're going to get their economic policies as well.
There's no question about that. And I'll tell you what's really interesting. If you go back and you look at the congressional record from January 10, 1963, we're talking 60 years ago, read into the congressional record were the goals of the Communist Party in America. And it is absolutely astonishing how many of those 45 goals they have accomplished. And that's part of the reason that Eisenhower was told by Khrushchev that your grandchildren's children will live under communism and we won't have to fire one shot. All of this is part of the changing of who we are. And we have to be vigilant. We have to understand what is happening, the manipulation that's going on, looking at what's going on in our school systems, how they're trying to get to our children early on in order to plant the seeds that will never be uprooted, as Lyndon said.
And as you touched on earlier, Dr. Carson, the two big barriers to the left, to the Marxist, number one is the family, and number two is religion, orthodox religious conviction. Those two things stand in the way because they have transcendent authority. They stand on something that is not shifting. And so that's why we see this all-out push to attack the family, to attack religious expression. But that tells us those are the two things that we have to fortify and strengthen as we face the days ahead.
Absolutely. Those are the things that took us from a ragtag bunch of militiamen to the pinnacle of the world in record time. And we had values. And those values enabled us to work together. You know, this was a very interesting country. Most countries have a lot more homogeneity than we did. We had people from England and France and Africa and Portugal, and they would end up in these communities in Western Kentucky or Iowa. And there might be 20 families or 50 or 100 families. They could barely communicate with each other, but they understood the concept of the common good.
Yeah.
And the values and principles that lead to that kind of thinking. And, you know, they took care of each other. You know, if Mr. Johnson fell out of the tree and broke his leg at harvest time, everybody else harvested his crops, no questions asked. It was that kind of unity, that kind of attitude that made the difference. We've replaced that now with something that says if your neighbor has a sign in his yard that's different from your sign, he's your enemy. You know, that kind of attitude obviously leads to chaos. Jesus said it best, a house divided against itself cannot stand.
It is that idea birthed in this nation based upon Western civilization values that emanate from Christianity. Not saying that this nation has always been Christian in all of its conduct, it has not. But it is that underlying understanding that each and every human being has value because they're created in the image of God, and that we all have purpose. And as
Absolutely.
We lose that, as you pointed out, we become more of a fractured, divided society. Dr. Carson, always great to see you. Looking forward to having you at this year's Pray Vote Stand Summit.
I can't wait to be there, and thank you for providing it.
All right. Dr. Ben Carson, a great American, and be sure and check out the resources they have at the Cornerstone Institute. And, you know, by the way, just thought about it as we were talking about the books that they have, these children's books, and they're really good. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. You can follow the links over. But this would be a great opportunity to take these books, schedule time at your local library, and read them and host the kids and read them something that's good about America. I appreciate the work that Dr. Carson's doing. Hey, by the way, let me again invite you to come to this year's Pray Vote Stand Summit. You'll hear from Dr. Carson and many others, as I mentioned. Today we're announcing that former President Donald Trump will be there. Governor Ron DeSantis will be there, and I'll have some more announcements in the days ahead. But you can register by going to prayvotestand.org. That's prayvotestand.org. Be sure and go ahead and register now to make sure you've got a seat. We'll have some of the nation's top conservative and Christian leaders there telling us what's the way forward. What do we need to do to take this country back? All right, folks, until next time, I leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything that you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.